You are listening to Radio Aryan.
Welcome to RA Britannia. Today's date is Monday, the 12th of March, 2018. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and we are broadcasting at RadioAryan.com. And I'm joined today by a political commentator and activist, Alex Davies. Alex, how are you doing today?
Yeah, good, Sven. How are you? All right?
Pretty good. Pretty good. It's been an exciting week, a really exciting week of news over the last week. We've got lots to be getting into today. A lot of it is to do with people on the, well, not just in the British alt-right, but also in the Austrian alt-right, Generation Identity. We've got Martin Selner and Brittany Pettibohm. They're currently still in jail. We've got Paul Golding and Jada Franson, both of those were jailed last week. We've had Sargon being attacked this weekend. We've had Tommy Robinson being attacked, and we're going to get into all of these subjects. But that's all really sort of movement news, I guess. But I've got another story that I think we should start off with, which is to do with the Muslim grooming gangs. And this is from an article that was released this weekend, and it claims that it's Britain's worst ever Muslim rape gang scandal. Up to 1,000 children could have suffered in Britain's worst known abuse scandal, where Muslim sex gangs targeted girls as young as 11. The rape hell of vulnerable young girls in one town, Telford, went on for a shocking 40 years. That started back in the 80s. As many as 1,000 children could have suffered at the merciless hands of perverts and torturers in Telford since the 1980s. Girls as young as 11 have been lured from their families to be drugged, beaten and raped in an epidemic that, say victims, is still ongoing. Three people were murdered and two others died in tragedies linked to the scandal. The scale of the abuse uncovered in Telford, which has a population of 170,000, is feared to be the most brutal and long-running of all. And if 1,000 children suffered there, and the population is 170,000, that means one in every 170 people in the town has been forced to have sex with one of these savages. And if you think that probably 20% of that is non-white, and at least half of them will be men, so you can halve that, I guess, really. You could say that that's probably 1 in 70 or 80 people has been forced to have sex with one of these Muslim savages. And the Rotherham toll was put at 1,500, but that was in a community of 260,000. So that was somewhere that has had twice as many people in it as Telford. I mean, this is really shocking. Do you know anything about Telford? Have you heard of this going on there before, Alex, at all?
Well, yeah, the Britain First people had a demonstration there before about this last year. If you look at Telford, if you look at Rotherham, what's surprising is actually how white these towns are. Telford isn't a majority non-white town. It's not a town that's overrun with immigrants. It's a vastly majority white town. And it's almost amazing that these people can get away with it, because you think about how outnumbered they are. It's not like somewhere like Birmingham or Sheffield or Leicester or towns like these, where they've got communities, they practically dominate certain areas of towns. It's not like that in these areas. Rotherham, the Muslim part of Rotherham, is pretty much a single street. The same with Telford, I'm guessing. I've never been to Telford myself, but I know it's a very, very white town. And what we've got to ask ourselves is, what the hell is going on? Why is it that this has been allowed to happen? And, you know, at the end of the day, people can't just turn around and go and say, oh, well, you know, the police didn't do their jobs. Oh, well, the authorities let us down. you know, that's just a cop out, because at the end of the day, every single girl who gets groomed and raped has family, they have friends. You know, what the hell is going on? You know, at the end of the day, there's a story in here about a 16-year-old girl who, well, about a girl who was being groomed, and on her 16th birthday, what does she get? She is gang raped by like five men. Now, that girl would have had parents. That girl, even in her school, she would have known young lads. What were the young lads in her school doing? You know, 15, 16-year-old lads. Why weren't they getting together and doing something about this? You know, it's such a sad indication of how atomized our societies have become. If when something like this happens in a small town on this sort of scale, nothing is done, there's no kind of reaction.
Yeah, everyone must have known about it. I mean, you look at the numbers. I mean, that's going to be one in 70 people that this happened to. And as you say, they must have family, they must have friends. I mean, these Muslims have got family and friends because they all stick up for them. They all stick together, and they cover up for them. They provide alibis for them. They pass these girls around, their brothers, their uncles, you know, their friends. They all know what's going on. They are all connected, and they allow this to go on. They condone this. They think that white girls are just slags. They've said that in court. They look down their noses at us, and yet our community doesn't pull together and doesn't do anything about it. The police are frightened. They think that they'll be accused of racism if they investigate it. You know, I agree with you, Alex. It is a really, really sad indictment that this could go on, and our communities are so shattered and downtrodden and broken apart and overburdened with this false white guilt that we couldn't get together and do anything about this. I mean, this is a personal insult to everyone in Britain that this went on, and we don't have enough strength in our communities to fight this. You know, it's just so insulting just to think that.
Yeah. And, you know, you say that people would have known about this. You know, I actually think to myself, maybe most people didn't. Maybe we are so alone and atomized and divided that actually we don't know what the hell is going on with our neighbor. We don't know what's going on with people who live in our street. Maybe we're so blind and we're so absorbed in our own little worlds that we don't actually see what's going on right under our noses. Plenty of people use these kebab shops, I tell you, on a Saturday night and a Friday night. They're packed full of people. But you know what? People probably don't realise, or people probably don't pay attention to the fact that young girls are coming in and out of these kebab shops, that they're going into the back rooms, that they're coming out, you know, at 3 o'clock in the morning, and they're pissed. They probably are simply not paying attention because they're wrapped in their own little world. They're wrapped in their own little bubble. They're more concerned about their next holiday than buying their next car, paying off the finance, paying off the mortgage, going to work, and these types of things. They're probably more concerned about watching EastEnders and these types of things, what the next plot line on Coronation Street is going to be. I think that's something that is just, you know, really, I think that's probably what's happening here. People just are so self-obsessed and blind that they just simply don't pick up on what is going on.
The victims probably, you know, put out feelers to see whether they could say anything. And then they realized that if they did, they would get accused of being racist. You know, they probably sort of started hinting on the subject just to see what the response was likely to be from the people around them. And, you know, they probably found that they would be accused of being racist. The same treatment that they got from the police. And this is going on since the 1980s. It was first identified in the 1980s that this was going on. And that was, what, 40 years ago? And now there's finally an investigation. 40 years later, 40 years, these savages were allowed to just carry on unmolested in what they were doing. To continue with the article here, it says the vast majority of those targeted were young white girls, but a few teenagers from the Asian community also fell victim. mean, they feel that they have to say that to try and balance out the article, but I bet it was only one or two. And that was probably Sikh girls. And again, that's a religious thing. And they see the Sikhs as being beneath them as well. You know, there's a problem with that, which, the alt-light often covers. You often hear Tommy Robinson talking about it. But the vast majority are white girls. The victim in one case, groomed at 13, sold for sex and gang-raped, said she pulled out of the investigation because she didn't feel she was being emotionally supported by police. Another victim claims officers discouraged her from pursuing her request for evidence after she told them she was speaking to the press. A mum and four girls have died in tragedies linked to the abuse. Lucy Lowe, 16, was killed in 2000, along with her mother and her sister, after her 26-year-old abuser, Azhar Ali Mehmood, set fire to their house. Cabby Mehmood targeted Lucy in 1997, and she was just 14 when she gave birth to his daughter. He was jailed for murdering Lucy, her mum Eileen, and 17-year-old sister Sarah. But he was never arrested or charged in connection with any child sex crimes over his illegal relationship with the schoolgirl. Lucy's death was used as a warning to other girls, according to victims. One, drugged and raped by nine men 2 years later, said the threats drove her to attempt suicide. She was gang raped by these nine men 2 years later. She said, "I was scared my family would die like Lucy's. I thought they'd only be safe if I killed myself." In 2002, 13-year-old Becky Watson died in a car accident that was reported at the time as a prank. This investigation found she suffered 2 years of abuse by an Asian grooming gang, they call it, a Muslim grooming gang, which began when she was just 11. Tragic diaries obtained by The Mirror, that's who's producing this article, reveal her torment at being made to sleep around. Her mum, Torren Watson, said she repeatedly told police that Becky was being abused and even gave them a list of suspects. She told the Sunday Mirror, "Girls like Becky were treated like criminals. I was crying out for help, but it felt like I had nowhere to turn. If Becky's abuse had been properly investigated by the authorities, more girls could have been saved from going through this hell." Vicky Round, a friend of Becky's, was abused by the same gang, who got her hooked on crack cocaine aged 12 and on heroin by 14. She died aged 20 of a drugs incident. And her sister Emma told us, "I have no doubts that Vicky would still be here if she hadn't been so badly abused. Yet the people who made her life hell still walk the streets." So they're still just swanning around to this day. And the fact that they don't actually get prosecuted, you know, they're just going to use that and say, "Well, we can do whatever we like. We're not going to get accused of anything. If we do get accused of anything, we're just going to scream racism and hate crimes and prejudice." And when they do attack these girls, like this murdering three of them, they will just use that as threats. So there are other instances in the article of these threats being made, and they threaten to attack the family of the girl that's being abused. Or they threaten to tell them that their daughter is a prostitute, because by this time they've got them hooked on drugs and sleeping with all sorts of men. I mean, when you first hear about this, you think, well, surely the girls must think that, it's a bit odd. You know, they shouldn't be opening their legs to all these different men that are being brought in. But they work on these girls psychologically. These girls, some of them, they think that they're it's their boyfriend. They're girls that nobody's ever paid any attention to before in their lives. And these Muslims make them feel very, very special at first. And they take them out in their cars, and they're a bit older, so they've got a car, and they do all the older things, and they give them a few drinks, and they give them some drugs, and all the people around them say, "Oh yeah, 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 you know, you can sleep with these others. That's just what grown-ups do. You want to be grown up, isn't it?" You know, all these little psychological tricks they play on them until they are sleeping with them and they realize, "Well, I'm now a sex slave." And if they try to get out of it, they do things like nail their tongues to the table and brand the word Muhammad into their arse cheeks and all sorts of other sick, twisted things that these creatures do. And this is how it happens. You can't blame these girls. And in the same way as well, you can't say that anybody under the age of 16 can really give consent. They're not adults. You know, they cannot give consent. It's rape every single time with the law in Britain. And yet this guy that killed the mother, the sister, he was never charged with sexual abuse, and this girl gave birth to his child at 14. This is another complication of this. Some of these girls have got these half-caste bastards that they had because they didn't want to have abortions. So every day of their life, they're going to be looking at this creature that they are having to bring up that reminds them of the monster that did this to them. It's just to think that this is what's going on in Britain at this time, and the people that are speaking up about it are being silenced and told that they're extremists and being put in prison for it. I, if that doesn't wake you up to the fact that we have traitors in power and we have a foreign force running our government, then I really don't know what will.
Yeah, and people talk about, first of all, we all know in our own lives, people who, when they were younger, at the age of 15, 16, they had a girlfriend, maybe the boy was 16, girl was 15, parents find out they're having sex or something like that, and the boy gets in trouble because, you know, he's over the age of consent and she's below the age of consent. But the age gap is very, very small in these cases. Yet the police in those cases will really come in, and I've heard of instances where they've been quite heavy-handed. Yet in these instances, you can have a bloke who's in his mid-20s going out with a girl who's 14, 15, even younger sometimes. Police won't do anything about it. You bet though that if the roles were reversed and it was a white guy and a parent gave a list of maybe a number of white guys who were grooming a girl, you bet that the police would take action. Or you'd hope they would anyway. But also, there's one thing I want to point out here, and that is, if you look at these instances, these prove that we are in the middle of a racial conflict. We are being attacked. When people talk about a race war, they think about this sort of post-apocalyptic situation where, you know, there's all sorts of death and chaos and destruction going on. But I would say to people, we are in the middle of a race war now. We are being attacked by these people. And you mentioned, like, it's not Asian grooming gangs, it's Muslim. No. It is Asian grooming gangs, because the Sikhs do this to us. The Hindus do this to us. There's no such thing as a based fucking Hindu or whatever, or based Sikh. All of these people come here and they all, on some level, are attacking us. They stick to their own. They have their own racial consciousness. They see themselves as a group, and they act against our interests. And there was a case in Liverpool the other last year where two men who were they were Hindu men from Sri Lanka. They were running a corner shop and they were grooming loads of girls. It happens. Whenever you have Asians in this country, whenever you have Asian communities, doesn't matter if they're Sikh or Muslim, you will find this sort of behavior going on. The Muslims, they're the predominant group, so they're the ones that you hear about the most. But trust me, they're all at it. And the same with the blacks. Same with the blacks as well. I'd suggest that with them, it's more to do with drugs and pushing those on our kids. But at the end of the day, all it comes down to is different methods to attack us, getting our young kids hooked on drugs, getting our young girls and using them as sex slaves, getting them pregnant. And once you've got a girl pregnant and they've got a half-caste kid, they're spoiled. They're no longer part of our group. They're part of their group. We've lost them. And this is something that we need to understand. Racial conflict isn't something that's going to be happening in 20 years' time. It's not some far off in the imagination. It's happening right now. It's just the fact that we are the victims and we are getting the proverbial shit kicked out of us. And people, as you can see in this instance, are dying. They're being killed by these people. and we are absolutely defenceless.
It's all seen as individuals. This is the thing. You have to look at it as a group. You have to look at it as non-white attacks on white people. I mentioned that it was Muslim rape gangs because, you know, Asian people think, what, Chinese? You know, and it is predominantly Muslims, but it's just non-whites against whites. And it's not just rape gangs. It's, as you say, it's the drug dealing. It's the mugging. It's any way that they can attack us, they will. They will use it. And you have to look at it as a group activity, because these groups would not be here if our government had not imported them. We would have none of these girls would have been raped if there was brown people.
And there are other examples. There's people like Chris Donald, who was, you know, kidnapped off the streets of Glasgow, and he was beaten, and then they set fire to him. And again, it's the same people. It's Asians all the time. And we've got to think to ourselves, you know, it doesn't matter whether you're a boy or a girl. If you're a girl, they'll use you for sex. If they're a boy, they'll just batter you and kill you. And we've got to understand that, yeah, it is simply a case of us versus them. And there's no distinctions. There's no kind of, you know, you have these apologists who say that not all like that, not all of them are bad people. Well, at the end of the day, how the hell are you going to distinguish between the ones that aren't going to do you in and the ones who are? Because they're not going to make the only thing that they use to distinguish between people is the color of their skin. And if we don't adopt that same sort of thinking, then we are going to be at a disadvantage all the time, and we are always going to lose.
That's what I'm saying. We have to look at them as a group. It's no good saying, well, there's some individuals that don't do this, or it's only some individuals that do this. The fact is, it's their group that does this. And you might as well say, well, not all crocodiles are man-eaters. Well, so what? You still don't want crocodiles wandering around your streets or bears wandering around your streets. Keep the crocodiles where they're supposed to be. And we need to keep the non-whites where they're supposed to be. They are nothing. They bring nothing to improve this country in any way, shape or form. And the only thing that people can come up with is old food, kebabs. Like, we can't make food for ourselves. We don't need them for anything. And all they are is a drain on our resources. And they do these horrific things to us. And, you know, we are right in the middle of a war. It's not something that's going to be coming in the future. We talk about this race war, and it's just gradually building. It's just going to gradually increase. And the press is going to keep trying to make out that it's just individuals doing this. But it's not individuals. As I say, it's a group. That's the way we have to see it, is that it's a group that's doing this. And the people that are speaking out against these groups that are doing this, they're the ones that our government are trying to make examples of, and are trying to make out that they're the bad guys, and not just the hardcore extremist types, and not even the racial types. I mean, if you look at what happened last week, you've got Martin Selner and Brittany Pettibone, and you can hardly call them extreme racial activists, but they are nationalists. They are civic nationalists. And they were arrested at the airport. As they were arrested at the airport because Brittany Pettibone wanted to talk to Tommy Robinson. And Tommy Robinson is another. He's not an extremist. He's a journalist. He works for InfoWars. It's like arresting someone because they went to America because they wanted to talk to Alex Jones. It's ridiculous. I've got a report here from Gateway Pundit. Austrian activist Martin Selner of Generation Identity and his girlfriend, American author and YouTuber Brittany Pettibone, have been detained by airport police in England for nearly 3 days. Nobody from the US State Department or embassy contacted Pettibone's family. Selner was on his way to give a speech that authorities say would cause tension among local communities and possibly incite hatred. And we've got a quote here from Generation Identity. Yesterday, Martin Selner and Brittany Pettibone were detained in the UK government by the UK government and effectively declared political dissidents. The government has decided that Martin's talk about free speech is too dangerous to be heard. Don't worry, some of our activists will be reading his speech at Speaker's Corner at noon tomorrow in his stead. We can't allow either the far left or the government to silence us, a statement from the British GI chapter read. And Speaker's Corner is, you know, it's famous throughout the world as somewhere where anyone can go and speak. That's the whole point of it. People, that's we're supposed to be so proud of our free speech in Britain. We have a special corner devoted to it. People can go there and speak. And yet they've arrested him for coming here to speak at that corner. And this hasn't been in any of the major news. I wonder why. Continuing with the article, Selner frequently speaks out about the dangers of European nations taking in migrants. He was supposed to be addressing the issue at Speaker's Corner in Hyde Park on Sunday. Journalist and researcher Nick Munro spoke to Pettibone on Saturday afternoon when she called him from the detention centre. She told him that she is expecting that they will be released on Sunday, 72 hours after their initial detention, and she has not been permitted to speak to Selner. Now, we record this on Sundays, and they still haven't been released. One of the reasons for the detention was that they were planning to interview former Rebel media journalist Tommy Robinson. And we've got another quote here. My speech for the YL official conference, the Young Identity official conference, was cancelled for the second time due to security risks caused by left-wing threats, Selner tweeted. But we won't be silenced. On Sunday the 11th, I will give my speech on Speaker's Corner, and I invite everybody who had a ticket for the conference to come. This pledge comes after a planned free speech conference of UKIP's youth wing, the Young Independents. This weekend, it was cancelled amidst alleged security threats, the Evening Standard reports. So he was due to be speaking to UKIP, and they called that off. So he said he was going to give his speech at Speaker's Corner. According to the Evening Standard, the Home Office had previously refused to comment on whether or not Selner would be blocked from entering the UK. And they said the Home Secretary may exclude an EEA national on the grounds of public policy or security if they pose a genuine, present and sufficiently serious threat, they said in a statement early Saturday morning. And the event, the UKIP event, was facing threats of rioting from Antifa communists. How can they say that Brittany Pettibone presents any kind of serious threat to Britain? I really don't understand that one. And how they can say that she's been arrested because she wanted to speak to Tommy Robinson. Tommy Robinson isn't banned. He hasn't got any charges against him. He's got this ludicrous nonsense that the anti-terrorism police chief, the outgoing police chief, made up last week that we talked about, Alex. But that's all. This is just shutting down political dissidents, and the fact that they've been held in a detention centre for 3 days without actually having committed any crime, without there even being any charges against them, and to think that they specifically asked the Home Office whether they'd be allowed into the UK, and they didn't say we are not going to be allowed to come in. I mean, one thing that I would say about this, if they thought about this, they really should have made certain that they were actually in Britain first before telling people they were going to be going to speak at Speaker's Corner. I mean, we had Matthew Heimbach the other year who was banned from coming to Britain. And if he had just come to Britain first before saying he was going to be speaking somewhere, everything would have been fine. But because it was in the press that he was going to be coming to Britain and he was going to be speaking, he received a letter saying that he was banned from coming to Britain. And I would have thought that since then people would have been sensible and thought, well, you've got to actually get into the country first before making it known you're going to be speaking anywhere. That would be the sensible thing to do. I guess they just thought that, well, we're not extreme enough for the UK government to do anything like this. But clearly they are. I mean, the guy was going to be speaking to UKIP. So this is saying that anyone on UKIP's level, the government views as a far-right extremist, and they should be banned from coming into the country. I was really shocked when I heard this news, Alex. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, I was reading up about this, and Brittany Pettibone mentioned to somebody, I think it was Caitlin Robinson, that she spoke to over the phone. And when she was speaking to the guy at customs, and he said, you know, what are you doing? You know, what are your intentions here? And she was like, oh, I'm going to interview Tommy Robinson. Apparently, he turned around and said, oh, who are you going to interview next? The KKK? And I thought that was really, really funny, because all these people have done, you know, Generation Identity, Tommy Robinson, these people, all they've ever done is counter-signal the authentic, right, the people who are actually talking the truth and nothing but the truth. They've always sort of denounced violence, and they've denounced extremism, and they said, oh, you know, I'm not racist. It's not about race. It's about culture, you know. And Martin Selner's, you know, he's on the same kind of wavelength as that, you know. Generation Identity are very much about trying to present a PC, politically correct version of nationalism that's watered down, that's safe, that's, you know, not got the baggage associated with regimes in the 30s, you know, fascism and national socialism. All this does is prove that the state views any kind of patriotism or nationalism that they don't control as being a threat, because it leads to other things. You know, you might call yourself a patriot, or you might call yourself a civic nationalist, but they know that that can lead to other avenues. They know that people start off, you know, they start off as these civic nationalists, as maybe Eurosceptics and these types of things. But very, very quickly, they start thinking about other things. They start talking about race and ethnicity, and they start wondering, who is it who brings all these Muslims over here? Who is it that is behind all of this mass immigration? Who's behind the push to turn Britain into a third world hellhole? Why is it that when I talk about these issues, that people don't like it? And why is it that the media always call me racist? Who's behind that? I wonder, why is it that the people with certain names always crop up? You know, the Cohens, the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds. Why is it, or the Soroses? Why is it that these people with these funny names always tend to crop up behind the scenes of these pro-immigration, open borders movements? Why is that? And that is why the government are really scared. Because they don't want, you know, they don't want a Generation Identity to prop up and have thousands of members and make it kind of popular among young people to be patriotic and nationalistic. Because very quickly, those people who might at the beginning be talking very kind of moderate language, very soon they might be talking in a much more radical kind of way once they realize, once they go down the rabbit hole and they see that things aren't always as they seem, and there's more to things than just what initially appears to be the problem. There's more to it than just Muslims and Islam and immigration. There's a wider picture of globalization and globalism, and then once you start looking into that, well, very quickly you find lots of you-know-whos, lots of Normans behind the scenes controlling things. So it's very interesting what's happened here, but I think it'll be a wake-up call to a lot of these civic nationalists that actually the state aren't going to treat them with kid gloves. They're not going to allow them just to go about their business unperturbed. They are going to be keeping these people under heavy manners, because they can't allow these people to get a foothold and to grow. But that event at Speaker's Corner has taken place. It took place without any kind of disruption. There weren't a huge number of people there. It was about 80 to 100 people. So it's yeah, fairly decent, not huge, but fairly decent turnout. And the Antifa counter demonstration was tiny. They turned up late, and only about 20 of them turned up. So they were basically kettled by the police. And the GI people were allowed to just go about their business, get their activities done, and go home without any issues.
Well, that's good. That's good at least. But you would think that's one place where speech is supposed to be protected. You're supposed to be able to say anything like at Speaker's Corner. That's what it's there for. To ban somebody from speaking there is unheard of in the history of the country. Maybe it's worth, I'm going to look into that a little bit more after this podcast, I think, actually, the history of the place. But, you know, what you bring up there, that the civic nationalism leads on to ethno-nationalism. And this is why I'm not so into attacking these other groups for not being hardcore enough. Because I know that myself, you know, I wasn't born a nationalist. I came to nationalism through looking through the softer versions of it first and the conspiracy side of things. And that led to ethno-nationalism. So this is why I don't, you know, they may counter signal us. They may say, oh, the far right, we're not racist. We're not racist like the National Front or the BNP. But I'm not going to attack them and say, oh, they're a bunch of Zionists and all the rest of it. You know, I would like their supporters to become more radicalized and to influence the people that they follow. And this generation identity, they looked pretty good on the exposed. They did an expose on them a while back that was also exposing Anne-Marie Walters and Julie Lake. And all they can say about generation identity is that they were good-looking, young, intelligent people that didn't want to go out and get drunk. And that was about all the charges that they could lay at this group's feet. And they did. They looked very intelligent. They were having intelligent conversation. And they were well-behaved. They weren't smoking. The rest of it, I'm sure they actually... The public, who probably never heard of them before until watching this documentary, were probably scratching their heads and saying, well, what is it that's wrong with this group? Why are they being treated like this? And the fact that they are being treated like this, you know, there's nothing better for really getting these guys angry at the government. I mean, if they think that Brittany Pettibone or this guy from Generation Identity are going to stop doing what they're doing because they've been treated like this, you know, they've got another thing coming. It's going to make them dig their heels in all the more, because it's just going to prove to them that everything that they say is true and that the government is against them being patriotic, because they know that their cause is right. They know that their cause is true and pure, and they're doing it out of platonic love for their nation. You know, the highest ideal of love that we have, platonic love, love for somebody else that is not based on any sexual desire whatsoever, that, you know, that is the highest form of love that these activists are displaying by taking these risks, and they're being punished for it by the government. You know, that's going to help to radicalize them more than anything else, because they know that what they are doing is right. And while this was going on, while these innocent people were being arrested at the airport, one of them for wanting to talk to Tommy Robinson and the other for wanting to give a speech at a free speech designated zone, Tommy Robinson himself was being attacked by Antifa terrorists on the streets, in broad daylight. Tommy Robinson, his camera woman and another cameraman were set upon by a group of around 7 masked thugs at a retail park in North London. In the video, Robinson can be heard asking if they wanted to go one-on-one before punches and kicks start being thrown from both sides. At around 7 p.m. yesterday evening, Kaylen Robertson, a video producer, said he had footage of Robinson being violently attacked in London by violent left-wing extremists and that it would be published in the evening. Mr. Robertson tweeted, "Camerawoman Lucy Brown thrown on the floor and kicked in the head. Cameraman attacked. Microphones and cameras smashed. Police everywhere." Robinson said he was near the McDonald's to report on a left-wing event when he claims he was set upon by the group. And there's been no arrests, no inquiries, nothing. 7 terrorists, masked terrorists, were able to just assault this group of journalists that were hoping to do some filming in broad daylight. The police have done nothing. And all you can say is that at least during the 15-second clip, Tommy Robinson was seen to throw a right-hand punch towards one of them as he staggers backwards, holding up his hands, and dressed in a black suit and tie, he grabs the man's suit jacket and unloads another 6 punches towards the thug's head, which does look good. And the other man swings 3 punches back, but none of them actually connect properly. So you've got an instance here of actual terrorism on the streets of Britain. The police aren't interested. Instead, they just want to accuse people that wish to do nothing but speak at Speaker's Corner and have a conversation with a journalist. They get arrested, but the left-wing thugs get a free pass. And people wonder why the left behave in the way that they do. And it's because they see this. You know, it's like what we were talking about earlier, Alex, about the Muslims. When they see that they're not arrested for their grooming gangs, they see that their victims are arrested, well, they're going to carry on doing it. And the left-wing, they see that they don't get arrested for beating up Tommy Robinson. Tommy Robinson gets, or not beating him up, but trying to, with 7 of them, 7 on 1. And Tommy Robinson gets called an extremist. for doing his journalism work, just for reporting on the same stories that the BBC do, but from an actual patriotic perspective. And this is good because it's in the Daily Mail. It's in the mainstream newspapers that this is being reported, and everyone can see what this Antifa, what the left wing are like. I mean, this is, it just shocks me, this dichotomy. On the same weekend that Martin Selner and Brittany Pettibone get arrested, Tommy Robinson is actually attacked by Antifa terrorists, and the police do nothing about it. Nothing at all. Which we've come to expect by now.
Well, this is where I differ with you on Tommy Robinson, because Tommy Robinson is somebody who has threatened nationalists with violence in the past. He's attacked nationalists who turned up to EGL demonstrations. He's condoned attacks on Nazis, and he didn't speak out when we got banned. And he doesn't, at the end of the day, he sees us as people who are National Socialists. He sees us as being just as much of a threat to his idea of Britain as the Islamic extremists. Because what Tommy Robinson is, he's a bit like Sargon of Akkad. He's somebody who's he's out there defending his right to drink, get pissed, fornicate, to run his businesses. He doesn't want a big, if you put it to him, Tommy, if we could roll back the state a little bit, reduce taxes, and cut down on red tape, what do you think about that? He'd probably go, oh yeah, mate, that sounds brilliant. So that he could, I think he used to run like tanning beds in Luton. But guess what? That's not the vision of society that we're propagating for. We're against him. And at the end of the day, if you're gonna actually say to people, if I come across these Nazis, I batter them. Well, guess what, Tommy? When you do come across some fucking Nazis, you're going to be put in the fucking ground. These leftists, Sven, I don't know why you're calling them terrorists, because that fight was absolutely nothing.
Because it's for a political aim. Terrorism is violence against people or property with the aim of or in the name of a political idea.
I wouldn't chuck around the term terrorism. And secondly, I have no moral problems with that either. So there we are. Violence has always been used in politics. And in this country, we've got a long history of political fisticuffs. Anybody who looks at British history knows that politics has never been this gentleman's game where we've always, just used our words. Politics has always been a very dirty game, and there's always been fisticuffs in politics. And this was absolutely nothing. Six guys set upon him, and guess what? He didn't even get a black eye. Absolutely nothing. But guess what? If he did encounter some Nazis and he gave it a bit of lip, I'm pretty sure those Nazis wouldn't be walking.
Yeah, I think he's going to have to change his views. He's going to have to change his views because he is now being put in exactly the same position that we are. He's being called the extremist. All his counter-signalling, all his speaking out against people that are to the right of him has done him no good whatsoever. He's now public enemy number one in the government's eyes. They're calling him far right. They're calling him extremist. And when he was responding to this, he was saying, look, he said, if National Action were designated terrorists, and yet they never did anything like this. Or words to that effect is what he was saying. I think he is going to eventually end up changing his views. He's going to have to. We need to have some unity here. I know what you're saying about him attacking groups in the past. I know he's attacked you personally in the past. But he says that you and the group you were involved with before have accused him of being a Zionist and a race traitor and how much you hate him. So you're saying, we really don't like him. And he said, oh, I really don't like you. And, it just seems senseless to me because we're both being attacked. But yeah, please continue. You were saying about how he was asking for it by going to a left-wing conference, which I think he was, in a way.
Well, yeah, this took place in Haringey, yeah? Now, in Haringey, the anti-fascist network were having a anti-fascist conference. Now, these people, they say on their website that their goal isn't just to sort of stand behind police lines and wave
placards in the air saying, you know, no more racism, they say quite openly that they are about physically confronting people who they consider to be racists and fascists, and they'll have a physical confrontation with them. So when you go and put yourself into that situation where you are, and they told the Antifa beforehand they were going to be turning up to this conference, what do you think is going to happen? You're putting yourself in remarkable danger. Now, he's very lucky that, first of all, he is capable of handling himself, and secondly, these people are soy boys who don't seem to know how to throw a punch. Because if they were serious people, and at times in the past, the anti-fascists back in the 80s, when you had IRA people and those types in amongst them, could do serious damage. He's very lucky that those people aren't there anymore. Because if he was, he, not only himself, but he would have put his camera crew in danger as well. You know, both Lucy Brown and George Llewellyn Jones were put in quite a lot of danger. Also, I mean, you talk about Tommy Robinson having to change his views. Well, at the end of the day, we didn't start the fire. He has physically attacked our people. He declared war on racism back when he was in the EDL, long time ago. He was more than happy to pander to the anti-racist agenda, and part of that involved attacking nationalists and saying that, oh, you know, Nick Griffin was scum. And we're talking, this was like 7-8 years ago now. We're talking a long time ago. If you look at interviews he did, where he's talked about the history of the EDL, back when it was the United Peoples of Luton, he talks about how he attacked National Front members who turned up to support the people of Luton. So it's not a case of, you know, oh, well, we can all shake hands and, oh, it's, you know, we've been bad and, you know, he's been bad and, you know, oh, we can just sort of... No, he started this. And he's always consistently attacked us. He is a Zionist. When we say he's a Zionist, I mean, we're not lying. He goes to Israel and he's all open about it.
Yeah, he is. He is. I agree. You know, I remember when he came out and did his, oh, I'm making friends with the Muslims. And, you know, and I just thought, you're a total traitor. How can you be doing this with this horrible Muslim guy with the Quilliam Foundation? You know, I have thought very negatively of him myself in the past. But after he spent that time in prison and, you know, I mean, that must have been really hard for him. You know, I've changed my views a bit on him now. And, okay, I don't see eye to eye with him on a lot of things, but I do have respect for him for sticking to his guns. And he is vaguely on our wavelength, you know, stopping the immigration, stopping the rape gangs, stopping the Muslims. I just hope that sometime in the future he might change his views, because he is now being treated exactly the same as if he didn't have those views in the first place. So what's the point in him having them? What's the point in him just making more enemies out of white people?
You know, that's always been the case, though, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it has.
Yeah, that's always been the point. Why bother trying to pander to people? Why bother trying to get into these big debates about, oh, how am I racist? How am I racist? Because I mean, let's be honest. How many times have we seen him actually talk to people and say, you say, how am I racist? There was that, he did a debate with, he was part of a TV program with a black rapper called Akala, who is one of these guys. He's like half, you know, half caste. So he's got a little bit, and he's more intelligent than your average black guy. And he talks about, and he's the type of guy who talks about structural racism and all that. And Tommy Robinson goes on to the show and he's like, tell me how I'm a racist. Tell me how I'm a racist. Tell me how I'm a racist. And obviously, Calla can't give any actual examples, but no, it's one of these things where we've heard that sort of line so many times and it just doesn't work.
You know, just
saying, challenging people and saying, tell me how I'm a racist, tell me how I'm a racist, it just doesn't seem to work. And, you know, it's always been the case of this attempt to get away from being accused of racism and get into these semantic battles just doesn't work. The BNP tried doing it in the 2000s, didn't work. He's tried doing it for eight years now. It hasn't worked. People really need to understand that how you're going to defeat these words isn't, and break their power, isn't by trying to deny that you are them, but actually embracing them and saying, well, racism is natural. Extremism, well, let's be honest, the situation we're in is extremely wrong. So what is wrong with being an extremist in this instance? Only extreme changes will provide the solutions to our problems.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with being a radical or an extremist. Being an extremist doesn't infringe on whether you're right or wrong, and whether you're right or wrong is actually what we need to be talking about. That's actually what matters, is whether you are right or wrong, not whether the media are going to betray you as a bad man or not, because they're probably going to betray you as a bad man anyway.
I think that's what he's realizing now. You know, one of the things I did notice is that he sort of went quiet for a while. And then when he came back, which was at the beginning of last year, you know, we'd had the birth of the alt-right. And the alt-right had popularized all these groups that he'd been against before. You know, a lot of the people he was supporting in America were the equivalent of the National Front or the BNP in Britain. And, you know, I think maybe because we have seen, you know, the alt-right includes the more extreme elements and the less extreme elements. And, you know, I would hope that since he's come back, maybe he understands that a bit more about the movement in Britain. You know, Generation Identity, for example, that they've got to be racial in some aspects. I mean, Anne-Marie Waters is now talking in racial terms. And, you know, I don't think it'll be long before we start hearing him talk about white genocide. But we had another violent attack last week as well. Another attack from the Antifa on someone who isn't anything to do with nationalism. It's on Sargon, the guy who's partially black anyway. And the Antifa went in and attacked him. Did you see that, Alex?
Yeah, at King's College London, they were having a discussion between him and the leader of the Ayn Rand Institute. And obviously, Sargon of Akkad, he's not very much, you know, he's not a fascist, you know, he's a classical liberal. He calls himself an English liberal, and he's into his John Locke and his John Stuart Mill and these types of people. So it really is a case of almost the left trying to attack anybody who doesn't agree with them, brand them as... I read the justification for why they were doing a call out against him, and it was to do with things about rape denial and these types of things, and the fact that he'd had actually debated with people on the alt-right, so people like Richard Spencer and Andrew Anklin, the fact that he just debated with these people made him a target, which is very interesting, isn't it?
Because yeah, I was thinking that's the reason, isn't it? It's because he's willing to have a discussion, which the left is always saying, oh, we want to have a discussion. We don't want to ban things. We want to show these nasty racists how abhorrent their views are. We can only do that by bringing it out into the open and discussing it. And then when you get someone like Sargon who does discuss it, he's attacked for actually speaking to us as if we're human beings. Yeah, I think that is a very important point that you're making there, Alex. Very important.
And I think that they, when you look at it in the context of how the week went, they come in, and if you look at the videos, they come in, there's about 10 of them, masked up, and they charge the stage. And I think what they think is going to happen is everyone's going to sit there and all the students aren't going to do anything. But what happens? The students start attacking them. One guy, the guy who's got the anti-fascist action flag, gets attacked, the flag gets stolen off him, and he gets pummeled to the ground. And I think they were completely taken unawares, they were taken off guard, they weren't expecting that sort of reaction. And so they have on, I think it was on the Wednesday or the Tuesday this happened, so basically these guys get quite a mauling. And they don't succeed in doing what they want to do, because whilst they disrupt the main event, Sargon just goes up the road and holds his talk somewhere else. Then on Saturday, they have this event where they are holding their anti-fascist conference, and that kind of gets disrupted, that gets derailed, because the police end up turning up. And you can see Tommy Robinson actually tries to go and sort of confront them after he's attacked. And so there ends up just being a big palaver there. And then on the third day, on the Sunday today, they were gonna try and disrupt this Generation Identity event. and they failed to do so. In fact, they had really bad turnout. So it's been a really bad week for them. And it's shown that actually these people aren't so strong. And these events all happened in London. London, city where we're the minority, a city where there are lots of students. It should be natural Antifa territory. They should dominate these places.
Yet it was a complete fail.
Not so much now.
That's brilliant. That's really good to know. I do think Sargon came out of it looking, you know, quite a hero. And I forget what it is, but I think if you type in Google Conquerors of the World or something, and it's got Sargon's face there that's been imposed on the Sargon of Akkad, you know, the old historical character. And instead of showing pictures of the actual Sargon of Akkad, they've got pictures of Sargon there as Conquerors of the World. Quite funny. But yeah, he came out of it quite well. Again, it's good to show the public what the left are like. And things like that happening really are showing the left, the world, what the left are like. Well, what happened at the conference then? So after this incident with Tommy Robinson, did the police go in and break the conference up or what happened there?
Well, no, because it was held on private ground, and it was held in a Kurdish community centre, which they use. Normally it's used for a anti-fascist boxing gym called Soul Star, and they didn't, you know, they the police can't enter private grounds without a warrant, basically. So they you know, they sort of mulled around for a bit. There was a bit of Tommy Robinson tried sort of getting the camera in people's face and sort of asking people, you know, what is it? What is it you're about? You know, what? Why? How am I? You know, again, how am I asking people how am I racist? Yeah. You know, when have I ever said this about Muslims? Da, 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 da. At the end of the day, these people seem to be really thick. So, you know, there's like this big confirmation bias. So Tommy Robinson sort of denying, you know, and asking people to quote him directly. Well, these people just turned around and go and said, "Tommy, you're scum, mate. I'm not going to give you the time of day." And, you know, but the police, yeah, the police didn't really do anything. They just sort of made sure that it didn't kick off again.
Well, again, last week, more trouble. I guess we've got time to cover this as well. Is Jada France and Paul Golding getting charged with racially aggravated harassment. And I believe Jada got 3 months, and I think Paul Golding got 6 weeks. And, you know, I mean, they did apparently get the wrong people. If you read the newspaper reports, it says that they went round to the wrong house. But I've seen a video from Tommy Robinson. He's saying that they didn't get the wrong house. It was just that the people hadn't actually been convicted of the crime of raping this young girl that went into the shop asking for directions. So it wasn't that they got the wrong house and the wrong people. It was just that the people weren't actually convicted of the crime yet. But the shocking thing of it is, the worry is, you know, what they're going to be going through in prison. He was saying that there'll be a price out on Paul Golding's head. I mean, you know, and whatever you think of Paul Golding, he does have courage to go out there and do these things. And he is trying to help the country and highlight Muslim grooming gangs and the Islamic problem that we've got. And now he's been silenced and he's in prison. And we also had last week, the report on the death of Bunny, you know, the activist that got sentenced to a year in jail for putting bacon rind on a mosque door handle, and he died while in prison, and there's been no investigation into it. That was a year ago, and now they've said that the report is finally there, so an inquest can be heard. So we've already had somebody that's died in prison. We don't know how he died. It may well have been the Muslims that did that to him. And we know that's what happens when they are inside. They're a prime target because the prisons are now full of Muslims. And, you know, it's a worry that Paul Golding is in there. And if he did make a mistake and get the wrong house, then surely that was down to a mistake made by the newspapers that were reporting on the story, because he must have got the information that that's where this guy was living from somewhere. The motives were entirely pure. And I believe that, you know, I think she spoke over the top of the judge at the end of it, and she had lots of supporters there, and they were cheering. So again, this is just silencing of all political dissent. And even these people that are, you know, on the soft right, on the alt-right, the Civnats, they're going after them just as hard as they're going after the ethno-nationalists. The government and the state puts us all in the same basket. And this is what, you know, the alt-right need to realize and, you know, back everybody up. We're all white. We all want to save the country, or we want to save our nation. Whether you think of it as a cultural thing or a racial thing, you know, it's still a very, very, very similar aim. You know, we don't want to be attacking one another. That's the way I see it. What do you think about Paul and Jada being incarcerated, Alex?
Well, it's not very good, because what they got done for the racially aggravated harassment, well, it's a very, again, it's one of these laws that is very vague, and it can be used against anybody who, what they were doing was running a campaign against people who had done something really bad. And obviously they got sent to prison for the crime of raping a girl in their kebab shop. Paul Golding and Jada France were running a campaign basically saying, why have these people been granted bail when there was genetic forensic evidence to prove that they were at the scene of the crime? You know, their semen were on the girl and on the bed sheets. Very, you know, they should have been put on remand. But no, they were given bail, and they were working in this takeaway. And you've got to think, well, to then go and try and highlight this and to try and, you know, confront these individuals is actually quite reasonable when you think about it. You know, to leaflet an area, one of the things that they did was they leafleted an area around where one of these people lived, informing them that one of their neighbors is coming up to court on the charge of child rape. That's actually, I think, quite a community-minded thing to do.
Yeah.
But I think when it came to the judge, the judge basically decided that because they were highlighting the fact that this guy was a Muslim, this means that there's a racial element to it. And that's how they were able to kind of bring a conviction. Also, one of the witnesses that was used by the prosecution also had basically added, after her initial statement, so after the initial incident where I think the Britain First people came to her house and sort of knocked on the door asking for one of these men, she accused Jada Franson of saying, like, you know, Muslim bastards or something like that. In her initial statement, she didn't mention that. She didn't mention the word Muslim. And it's on that word that Jada Franson was charged with racially aggravated harassment. That's where the racial comes into it. And that's why they've been sent to prison.
Shocking. Just to think that they're just being community minded and just trying to warn the people in the community of the threat that's there, an active threat, and they get punished for it. I think that's why they thought, you know, they stood a good chance of, you know, of winning the case, because all they did was say this guy is, you know, he's accused of rape and he is a Muslim. I mean, those are two facts, but they did play up on this idea that it was the wrong house and it was the wrong people. That's the point that they've been trying to make in the newspapers. So none of it's really clear. But it's awful that you know, another two people that are doing everything they can for their country are just being jailed. It's got to wake more people up. It really has. Have we got anyone we want to plug before we finish this week, Alex?
No.
No, no.
No plugs this week.
I think I'd like to give a big shout out to Vinny Struggle for his intrepid investigative reporting and exposing of a huge scandal over at Radio Albion. And that's all I'm going to say about that. But thanks very much for coming on, Alex. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. And we do require donations to keep the radio station going. And you can find the options for that in the sidebar at the Radio Arian site. Thanks for listening. We hope you all have a great week ahead of you. And we'll see you all again next Monday.
to Radio Aryan for an alternative to the anti-white system on RadioAryan.com.